Greetings and may the peace of Christ be with you. Welcome to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndale and I'm privileged to be your host today. I warmly invite you to enter into another conversation on living the Catholic life. You know, part of our Catholic life is always centered around the saints and the martyrs and everything that goes on within our church. But we have something unique coming on in our lifetime here. We're going to have the canonization of two popes in Rome on April 27th. Pope John the 23rd and Blessed St. John Paul the I'll get that right. John Paul is also going to be in there. And this is really a wonderful time for our church, and it's an exciting time for our church. But what also is exciting is we have a Catholic school here in the Diocese of Grand Rapids, West Catholic High School, who's going to have Pope John Paul as their patron saint of the church, of their school. And today I'm surrounded by people from West Catholic, and it's a joy to have them here. I have Father Scott Nolan, who is actually at the Basilica at St. Albert's, and he is the
chaplain
at West Catholic. I have Cindy Kniebel, who is the principal there. I have Phil Dolce, the director of campus ministry, and Sherry Quam, who is one of the parents of the students at West Catholic. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
It's a joy to have you here. You know, this really is a powerful time, and excuse me for stumbling over the Pope's name there, but I'm getting a little bit excited because I had told you that I am going to be leaving on April 24th to be at the canonization with how many millions of people, I have no idea, but it's going to be a beautiful, beautiful time, and it really would be a pilgrimage for my wife and I to be there. But let's talk about who is making the decisions to have this as Pope John Paul as the patron saint of the school?
Well, I can probably speak a little bit about that.
Cindy, please do.
I actually don't feel it may sound kind of strange, but I really don't believe that we chose Blessed Pope John Paul II as our patron saint. I really think he chose us. He found us, and there was just way too many coincidences that's happened over the last number of years to think that we just woke up one day and said, hey, we're going to have a patron saint and look at a list and pick one. It didn't happen that way at all.
Yes.
He showed up in our school, so to speak, in 2007. With the senior class graduating, and one of our parents had a daughter graduating. And we always do a senior hallway, and there's all sorts of posters and artwork that's done in there, and they decorate it with a theme. And the theme was superstars. And Pope John Paul II, who had recently died, he was the superstar in that hallway. And a woman by the name of Jill Rolfe did this beautiful picture, which she never intended to actually be a permanent fixture in our school. She did a mural. She did it in a very short time period. She painted a picture of JP2, as we like to call him,
because
it's easier to say. she painted a picture of JP2 on a mural. Basically telling the students that Christ is calling them and inviting them to Christ. And it was so beautifully done that Dr. Cox, one of our parents at West Catholic, or previous parents, had decided that it needed to be framed. So he framed it, and he put it right out in front of our office. So since 2007, every day our students come into the building, and everyone else who comes into their building are welcomed by the outstretched arms of JP2.
Isn't that beautiful? Mm-hmm. Father Scott, you being the chaplain over there at West Catholic, how are you perceiving this to go forth?
You know, I think it's fantastic. I think it's a great opportunity, you know, to have a patron saint, to have someone, a saint, someone whose intercession that we ask for in a particular way as a school, someone that we can invite our students to look up to. You know, I mean, I think to myself, how long ago did John Paul II die? And I mean, he died nine years ago. So most of our students actually were pretty young when he died, and can further generations of students at West Catholic won't have the same living memory of John Paul II that all of us do. And so I think it's a way for us to hand on the legacy of John Paul II to future, to current and future generations of students at West Catholic, and to continue to hold them up as a model and say, we want you to know about this man. Exactly. We want you to know about his life, his work, his ministry, what he had to say, and how he said it.
You know, if anybody ever studies John Paul II and his journey through life, being in Poland, an underground seminary, these are the things that we have to continue to enforce with our students, the journey this man had and the struggles to get where he was and to become the head head of our church, the chief shepherd. What a powerful journey that is was for John Paul II. Mm-hmm. You know, you just look at that man and you're in awe of what he accomplished in that time. Mm-hmm. Phil Dolce, director of campus ministries. How are the students accepting us? What's going on with them?
Father Nolan was saying, it's very exciting times, especially as we start to dig into his life. I mean, you just mentioned, you know, just some of the things that, about him. You know, there's a lot of things that the kids can learn about him and also implement or use to grow in their faith with God. I can think of, for instance, you know, by the age of 20, he lost his mom. He lost his older brothers.
Yeah.
He lost his dad. And a lot of our kids are going through, you know, different kind of sufferings. And, you know, they've lost loved ones. And to be able to see a man who's went through suffering, and he didn't get bitter, but he actually got better. And he started to draw close to God and become a man who changed the world.
Yeah.
And was sort of transformed by his suffering. And so I think just examples like that, the kids can rally behind and relate to. And hopefully, you know, through his example and intercession, we can become the saints that God is calling us to be.
Amen, amen. Father, back to you a minute. You know, here you went through a beautiful seminary, had, I'm sure, a beautiful experience. Can you imagine what it would have been like for Pope John Paul to be an underground seminarian at that time? It must have been just absolutely astounding.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been. I mean, obviously, I have no idea what it was like to do that. I was very much not an underground seminarian. You know, there were posters with our faces all over the diocese. But you know, I think there's a way that it formed the man that he became and helped to form it. And you know, I think as he talks about a bit himself, it really drew him near to his bishop, because his bishop was much more personally involved in the formation of his seminarians, because they didn't have a seminary. They couldn't have the formal studies that.
Nor did
in the same way.
They didn't wear any vestments either, did they? Nothing to designate them as a seminarian or even a priest.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, and he had to work. You know, in communist occupied Poland.
Yes.
He had to work in the factories while he was in seminary, which I think helped form him into the man that he became. And his writings on the dignity of work, on how important work is in our lives.
Yes.
And he learned that firsthand, and he learned firsthand what it's like to have a factory job, what it's like to be among people in that way and working with them. And I think it really helped him to become the Pope that we all know and love.
Amen. You know, and this is so critical in keeping that understanding and that memory alive of what Pope John Paul. And, you know, if we'll talk about John the 23rd also, but this is where concentrating on JP2 today because of what you're going to do at your church, but I'm sorry, at your school. But I want to get over to Sherry Quam, who's a parent. And you had told me before we came on, you have had 7 different encounters with John Paul II.
I've been in his presence 7 times personally, and it's just awesome. You literally, he touched me at one point, and it was like electricity went through my arm. I was one of those, maybe rock star, you don't want to have to wash your hand after he touches you, but you have to. But it became a joke, butt of the joke for the rest of the trip, because everywhere I went, everybody's like, oh, you have to treat her special. She was touched by the Pope. You know, she gets through customs. She was, you know, touched by the Pope.
And where was that at?
I was in Rome.
Okay.
I was in one of his audiences, and I was, while we were waiting for the Pope to come out, we were sitting there for an hour or more, and we were visiting with Mother Teresa's nuns. So I was in the group of Mother Teresa's nuns. And so when he came down with his little Pope mobile, we were right at the edge, and he stopped right by her group. And because I was in the middle of them, as I said before, I'm sure it wasn't because of me, but he grabbed...
You never know.
He grabbed each one of our hands in like a small shake, you know, as he went through the crowd. And it was just, it was like zoom, you know, it was like an electric shock.
You knew there was something special then.
Right, right. And from that point on, he became my hero. I mean, I was able to look up into his eyes and him look down at me. And it was just one of those looks.
Yeah.
And he has a very gentle, loving look, reminds me a lot of my father, so it was just, it was an awesome experience.
And you also said that you saw him at some World Youth Days?
I was at both World Youth Day in Denver in 1994, and I was also brought my 2 oldest daughters, and they were quite young at the time, but we brought them to Rome for the Jubilee year in Rome. So I was able to see them each time I was at World Youth Day, three different events.
You know, something funny that Cindy said, and you brought a magazine back, and you talked about JP2 as a superstar. Mm-hmm. And you have here, over here, Cher, you have the, what year is that?
1979. Yep.
It's the Time magazine. It says John Paul, superstar. They knew something we knew at that time also.
And I was just given this last night as a gift.
Is that right?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Before I came
and
here.
It does have has an album in there of all of his journeys. That would be a wonderful issue to keep on that.
Right.
So tell us about what the excitement's going on at West Catholic. What's going on right now in preparation? I know you're going to be having a mass. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, the Mass is on Wednesday, April 23rd. It's actually our Easter Mass, which I think is very fitting for having JP2 become the patron saint of West Catholic. Bishop Wachowiak will be saying Mass. Father Scott will be with us, as will Monsignor Stasker and some of the partner parish priests.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And that's going to be what time of day?
It's at 10:10. And strong suggestion. Public is welcome. We'd love you all to come on out and help us celebrate. We're so excited. We would suggest that you get there at 10 or even a few minutes earlier to make sure that you get seated right in front.
Yeah, absolutely. Father Scott, how are you preparing the students for this time?
That's a great question. You know, I think we're just asking the students. Phil Dulcey can talk a little bit more about it as well, because there's a few things that he's doing.
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
To prepare the students. But I think it's just talking about John Paul and inviting the students into what we're doing and really asking the students to learn. I mean, one of the things that we're doing sort of more remotely, but about it is to teach the students more about the Mass, about what happens at Mass.
Yeah.
So that not just at that Mass on April 23rd at 10 in the morning, but every Mass that they ever go to, they can enter more deeply into it.
Yeah.
And enter more deeply into the love of the Mass that John Paul had, that he showed with the way that he celebrated Mass, the way that he loved the Mass so much.
Yeah. You know, Father, you say something that's always profound to my heart, too, is that many Catholics have lost the understanding of entering into the Mass, of entering into the mystery. And that's really something we've got to get back into our Catholic churches, having people understand that they're not there just 45 minutes or an hour just to attend Mass. They're there to enter into it. And that's exactly what you're saying, is that we need to re-educate a lot of our people in coming to that understanding. But, Phil, first of all, let me ask this question. Was there a collaborative effort to whether this was going to happen? Did the students have any say in this as far as John Paul II going to become the patron saint, or is it...
They've been part of the planning process of what we're going to do to celebrate it.
Okay.
But I'm not sure how many kids were necessarily involved in the picking of John Paul II.
Because it was, as you said, it was started many years ago.
Well, it did. It's been, I want to say, a year and a half or 2 years that we've been on this path that we needed a patron saint. A few years back, I was at a conference, a five-state regional conference of the National Catholic Education Association, and we went around the room. It was down at Detroit Catholic Central, and they had all of the principals talk about their patron saint. And as we were going around the room, everybody is talking about their patron saints, and they came to me, and we don't have a patron saint. And there was only a couple of schools in diocesan
schools. They didn't send you home, did they?
No, they didn't. I was a little worried, though. But there was only a couple of diocesan schools in the room that did not have a patron saint. And on the way out the door, one of the Basilian brothers, you know, had grabbed me and said, "Well, do your students have anyone particular to pray to?" And he was almost confused that we didn't have a patron saint, because he really felt that the patron saint at Detroit Catholic Central was very helpful to their students. So all the way home, I was thinking, "Yeah, why don't we have a patron saint?" And I started asking that question, and it never, because we're a diocesan school, not an order school, which the Basilian brothers obviously are an order, and our school wasn't named after any particular patron saint.
Let me interrupt. Explain that to our listeners, the difference of those two.
Okay. There are different kinds of Catholic schools. Some schools are started by religious orders. The Franciscans have a number of Catholic schools. The Jesuits, a lot of you are very familiar with Jesuit education. The Basilian brothers, you know, St. Basil, who, you know, back in the 4th century stood up and said education is good. They have founded a number of schools, as there are lots of other orders that have done so. Dominicans, Sisters of Notre Dame. There's a fairly large number of orders that start schools. But many on the diocesan level, there's a lot of diocesan schools as well, where a diocese has started a school or two or three, or in some cases more than that. And West Catholic, Catholic Central, Muskegon Catholic, and St. Pat's out in Portland, all are Grand Rapids Diocesan schools. So not necessarily started by an order that already has a patron saint.
Okay. And we'll get back to your journey on that, but do any of the other schools right now have patron saints, do you know?
To my knowledge, no. I can't. I know Catholic Central currently does not. Okay. I'm not sure of the other two, but I don't believe so. Okay. If I'm wrong, you know, I'd hope someone correct me on that.
I'm sure they will. So, anyways, you're on your journey back in your car, and you're wondering why.
So I'm wondering why. And we had a staff meeting a little bit after after this experience. As I'm thinking, boy, we don't have a patron saint, and really just feeling in my heart that our students were missing something. There was something missing that we could help. Improve their prayer life, and maybe we should think about this. And I went back to a meeting, and as we're sitting at the meeting, we're planning our auction, we're planning the polka night that we're going to have in June, we're talking about Polish food, we're talking about everything Polish, because a lot of the West Catholic community have their roots in Poland. I know my family, my husband's family, a number of families in our area have Polish roots, and then I brought up the subject of, you know, oh, we don't have a patron saint, and what are your thoughts on that? And one of the people working for us, if you remember Ken Baldwin, our advancement director, kind of looks at me and he says, come here a minute. And he pulled me into the hallway and he pointed to Pope John Paul II and he said, doesn't it look like he's calling you and calling your students? And it was like, it just hit me. How could it be more perfect for the West Catholic community? And I had known quite a bit about Pope John Paul II myself. In fact, in 1979, I was on the mall in Washington, D.C., when he had Mass, and I participated in Mass. And he's always kind of been one of my personal heroes because of his work with communism and his hand in the fall of communism, and his theology of the body, and so many different things that he represents, that he's always been there. And it just dawned on me that this could be done, and I started talking to Bishop Hurley a little bit about it. And our superintendent and our president at the time, and everybody just felt that this was what we were called to do. Started on the path.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful. Phil, as you're going down this path, are the students participating for the Mass and help planning this event?
Not necessarily the event, but all the, because, you know, we don't want to just have this event and not have any meaningful impact on their lives.
Exactly.
And so how can we educate the students about JP2's life, and how can we sort of incorporate his spirituality into our school? And so those are all questions we're asking, and having different parent committees to help figure this out and to make this be a lasting impact. And so, you know, some of the things that we have been doing that the kids have been participating is we want to not only educate, we also want to make a little bit, you know, have fun with it. I mean this is our faith is exciting, something to celebrate, and, you know, isn't just, you know, faith boring. You know, let's try to snap that out. And some of the things we've been doing is one, just having a daily trivia contest. And so, you know, we ask daily trivia questions. The kids can write an answer down, put it in this little box I have outside my room, and the winner will basically be put into a pool of other winners, and that week we'll pull the main winner, and that person will win movie tickets and a JP2 T-shirt.
Great thought.
Great idea. And just ways to in a fun way help them get to know him, to know about his life. And then to again, hopefully, even become more interested. They'll maybe do their own research. And so that's just one small way we're getting the kids involved, making it exciting, making it fun, so that they can come to know JP2's life.
Exactly. You know, and you made a good point, too, because it's not just a one-day event. This is really a dedication of your school for all the students that will pass through. And really, going back to those that have left there, it's really an understanding of that patron saint now is attached to all the students of West Catholic. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful thought that is. Phil, are you recommending to students any type of reading or something I can be looking at to really get more in depth in John Paul too?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things we're doing. you know, reading wise, we're having discussions about how can we incorporate some of his work into our classrooms. For example, you know, like the art class, he had that beautiful letter to artists, and so be able to find ways we incorporate that. You know, he's written a lot about science. You know, I can think of one about his evolution and the faith, and just, you know, having our science classes read things like that. And so there's those, that aspect that we can actually put into the classroom. And there's also, you know, movies out there. You know, one of the exciting things about Pope John Paul II is one, that there's a lot of pictures, a lot of footage of him.
Exactly.
And so we can, for example, we're going to have a parent family movie night. And so hopefully the parents can bring their kids. And as a family, we can watch a movie to learn about Pope John Paul II. But there's what were some of the other things that we were
We were going to have just a fun, because he was athletic, we were trying to tie in something like a little competition with the kids, you know, with some kind of athletic event. One of the other key things I was also going to mention, that this is part of the celebration too, is naming our Adoration Chapel after John Paul II, because that was so key in his life with adoration. And we have a great program at West where kids are being prayed for from 9 to 2 every day that they're in school. And so that's one of our huge focuses.
Let me ask this question.
Okay.
That Adoration Chapel at West Catholic, is that perpetual, or do you have certain hours on that?
From 9 to 2.
From 9 to 2. Okay.
It's, we have alumni, parents, grandparents, parents of kids, friends, you know, are all invited to come. Of course, we have our anchors for every hour, but invite anybody. Students come, and on their homeroom, I'm always amazed when I'm in there how many kids will come and pop in and pray for a while. So it's really, I think that's one of the greatest gifts for Wes.
We know that when there's adoration, whether it's a parish or a school, it really brings a tremendous amount of grace into that setting. And thanks be to God you do that, because what a wonderful thing that is to have in our Catholic school on that.
Mm-hmm.
So now, do you have students yet at West Catholic?
I have my fifth one graduating.
Fifth one.
And my sixth one coming in.
Oh, my goodness.
So we'll be there for a few more years.
They keep you humble.
Yeah, we do. That's my pathway to heaven, for sure. Yes.
So you've had them all go through West Catholic?
I have had them all go through West Catholic, yes.
How involved are they with John Paul too, with you?
Well, probably because I'm interested. They are following. They're very good as far as, like, I mean, they all do adoration. They go to Mass on a regular basis, more than just, you know, your Sunday Mass. They follow programs with me. I mean, they've been retreats. They've been, you know, they've just, they've probably been indoctrinated and all this stuff since they've been born.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they have an interest, and they have knowledge of him.
Wonderful.
Which, you know,
Father
so.
Scott, I want to ask you a question, because, you know, we do have non-Catholics who listen to our radio show here. And, you know, sometimes it helps them to understand the pathway to become a pope. You know, they know about priests and all that, but maybe you can kind of walk us through the steps that what happens to be when you become the shepherd of the church, the chief shepherd.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's so the pope for a long time has been chosen from among the cardinals. So the cardinals, I mean, in a sense, being a cardinal is being, you know, it's called technically the part of the clergy of the Diocese of Rome. You know, Rome being the diocese, Peter, you know, that St. Peter himself, the first pope, on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. You know, Peter himself founding the Church of Rome, and thus continuing in that unbroken tradition over almost 2,000 years now of the bishops of Rome handing on, you know, one bishop to the next.
Yes.
And so the pope is always the bishop of the Diocese of Rome. And so is the chief shepherd, the one who guides the church in charity, who guides the church in love. And so the path to becoming pope is generally that they start out as a priest. You know, every pope was a priest and a seminarian before that. And
wasn't there one who was the deacon?
There could have been, yeah.
There was one pope who was a deacon.
Yes, yeah. So
there's always hope.
Yep.
Hope Thorndale. I like it.
Yes, Deacon Jim. And so I guess I should say, in you know, in the last few hundred years, I guess. And so, you know, how did John Paul II become Pope is that when his predecessor, John Paul I, died after about a month in office, you know, all of the cardinals who elect the next pope, and the cardinals were chosen by the pope, you know.
Just let me back up. Give us a distinction between what people call a bishop and a cardinal.
Sure. So a bishop is a successor to the apostles. So it's a particular type of being in holy orders. So deacon, priest, and bishop are the three orders of holy orders. And so being a bishop usually is a bishop of a diocese, like our Bishop Wolkowiak. He's right. the shepherd of the Diocese of Grand Rapids. There's also auxiliary bishops, you know. The Archbishop of Chicago has a number of auxiliary bishops who assist him, who help him in being the serving the people of the Archdiocese of Chicago, because Chicago, they have 3.5 million Catholics. One bishop can't,
that's right,
you know, just doesn't have time to, he hasn't learned to bilocate yet. So
the day's young. would these auxiliary bishops report to the primary bishop?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. I'm just trying to clarify for our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. And and then a cardinal is a particular, it's not an ordination like being a deacon or a priest or a bishop. It's an office in the church. The cardinals are the ones who assist the pope in serving the universal church, the church throughout the world, the Catholic Church throughout the world. So in that sense, they're a little bit like, you know, an auxiliary bishop or an associate pastor, in that their job is to serve, to assist the one who is in charge, the shepherd, in carrying out his task.
Maybe in a secular sense, and the people in business, I might say, they sit on the board.
Yeah.
They're in the boardroom with the president.
Yep. Yep. And so then, you know, when the Bishop of Rome becomes vacant, so either as Benedict did and he resigns, or as John Paul II so beautifully did, you know, dies in as Pope, all the cardinals come together to elect the next pope.
Yeah.
And in that conclave, John Paul II, you know, Carl Wojtyla was chosen to be the next
pope. I'm glad you said his name, because I wonder how many people would recognize Carl Wojtyla,
yeah,
as his name, given name at birth.
Yeah. Yeah, that was his name, Carl Wojtyla.
Yes.
And he was chosen as the next pope, and I mean, he was at the time a young man. He was in his 50s.
Yes.
And so
fairly young pope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was part of the beauty of him being made pope, that he was young when he was elected. And so he served for many years.
Yeah.
One of the longest, longest 10 years.
Yeah. One of the longest pontificates I can think of.
Yeah.
At least in, you know, mm-hmm, what I remember of studied, mm-hmm, but you know, you made another good point, Father. And I think it's so important for our Catholics is that Pope John Paul II showed us how to die.
Mm-hmm.
He really did. He did it with dignity, and he showed us the value of life right to the very end, because that man continued to struggle through his pontificate, even when he was failing so bad. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful witness that is to our faith. Do your students see that, Phil?
Absolutely. Yeah. Actually, one of our trivia questions was, what was Pope John Paul II's last words? You know, let me go to my Father's house, and just always having, you know, desiring to do the Father's will.
Yeah.
And to be able to see that, you know, through suffering, through adversity, you know, through trials, he still has his eyes focused on the Father. And there's so many parts of his life that we can look to and just find powerful examples of how to live the faith well. But, you know, like I said, especially during his death,
yeah,
that can be hard.
And, you know, because in a world that we're in today where life seems so trivial at times, he really continued to show the dignity from conception to natural death, that there is nothing more sacred than the human being, and to live according to God's will and die and return to the Lord when he calls us. So
yeah,
powerful understanding. So Cindy, coming back to you, as the students prepare for this, are they doing anything special up to this time? Are they preparing anything special in the school?
As far as
any banners or anything like that, or just bringing up more prayers or whatever it might be?
Well, the students are doing a lot of the activities that Phil was just talking about.
Okay.
I don't know if the art class is doing anything as far as their...
Yeah, not necessarily art class, but we're definitely trying to, you know, have his pictures and just anything about him throughout the school. And so from ordering posters to the picture that was that we talked about earlier, to at the Mass, we have two large banners that we're going to have on both sides of the altar. And so, you know, we really want to have a not only talk about him, but have the teens see him. You know, it'd be nice every hallway they turn, you know, there's something, a picture with a quote or something of John Paul II.
Yes.
So we're working towards that right now.
Wonderful.
Well, and one of the things that we found, which was another one of the coincidences, we have a storage room, and in the storage room, we found two pictures that really we don't know where they came from. The pictures are of JP2 in when he was younger, and there's quotes underneath, or the original language in it is Polish, actually.
Younger meaning before his pope, or
no, but when he was the one is when I think he was, I want to say, skiing or doing something outside, and he was probably in his early 60s, I want to say, or something like that. And we don't know where they came from. They showed up in our school, and then we remembered a number of years ago, I hope they didn't accidentally get left behind if they're not ours, but we had a traveling exhibit of JP2 come into the building of artwork, and we had in that main hallway, going up and down the hallway on both sides, we had art from his life at this traveling exhibit, and it stayed in our building for a number of months, and all the students had an opportunity to look and read, and I do know that a lot of that exhibit was originally in Polish with English captions underneath, and I don't know how if they were accidentally left, if they were gifted to us, but here they are. Someone even suggested maybe they had been down in the old diocesan offices before the move to Cathedral Square. And they're just warehoused here. But we're going to get those pictures out and get them hung around the school as well.
Wonderful.
And then Sherry?
Go ahead, Sherry. I am also donating. I happen to be holding on to some drawings from George Pollard, who is one of his official artists. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I've been holding on to him for a while. And since we're now claiming him to be our patron saint, I told them I would be framing these and donating these pictures.
Wonderful.
And donating them to West Catholic, so they shall have these.
Are they when he is in pontificate also?
One is like an official poster of when he was over the United, when he visited the United Nations.
Okay.
So it shows him like hovering over the United Nations, and one of them is also one of the official posters of World Youth Day in 1994 when he was in near Denver. And then there's a couple of the kind of like a black and white chalk drawings.
Yeah, wonderful. You know, so. I think it's important when you talk about these posters, particularly when he's skiing. And Father, you can relate to this. Most people look at a priest or bishop or a pope, and they think all they do is wear vestments and are holy all the time. there's no natural life to them at all. But when you see somebody like the Pope engaging in an activity, it first of all it humanizes them.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes us understand that he's a human being just like we are, but he has been elevated that position to lead our church. And I'm sure, Father, you probably get a lot of but people probably ask, what do you do in your spare time? And you probably have to tell me, yeah, I'm like you. I like to do activities.
Yep. Yeah, I think like it asked, so, Father, when you're not celebrating Mass, what do you do with yourself? Well, let me tell you. But, it's great to see. It would have been, I wasn't old enough to have remembered it personally, but I've seen, you know, the pictures of him when he was younger and skiing and going out and mountain climbing and hiking and everything. And
well, he was in theater.
Mm-hmm.
He was very active in skiing, coming into Poland. He did a lot of skiing, and that's the man was engaged in life.
Mm-hmm. He liked soccer. It's a big sport, and I guess he was a goalie. You know, people say that he was really good too. And so, to be able to see that human side of him, and it's easier to relate to. I think that's
great.
And
he loved the youth. He was always interacting with youth. He's the one who started World Youth Day.
Yeah.
So I just think that's huge legacy of why our kids can relate to him, because he always wanted to bring it back to the youth.
You know, it's amazing what we lift up to our youth today as role models. as compared to lifting up somebody like Pope John Paul. I mean, it's such a dichotomy, I think, sometimes in this world, and the people we put in front of our children that don't, and God bless them for what they do, but they don't exude the holiness that the Holy Father does. And we need to have that for our children. They need to see that understanding of living for God.
We need good role models, and we need to say, hey, we can lift the bar this high, and actually you can come up here. You know, Pope John Paul II is a good example, an ordinary man that went through some hard times. Yeah, he didn't allow his circumstances to define him, and he was able to overcome it, and he raised the bar for all of us. And so hopefully, you know, with John Paul II, we can continue to raise the bar at West Catholic. You know, Sherry mentioned the Adoration Chapel. That's something that's been going on for 20 years. You know, people have been coming to our school praying for students, and now students are starting to come in there, starting to pray. You know, I found this quote. Blessed John Paul II said, "The best and surest, most effective way of establishing everlasting peace on the face of the earth is through the great power of perpetual adoration of the Blessed Sacrament."
Yeah.
And so just be able to have, when the students are in school, people are in that chapel praying for you, you're available to, you know, if you're open to come in there and just be with Jesus for a while.
Exactly.
And I think that's another legacy that Pope John Paul II left for us, that West Catholic is really trying to incorporate into these kids and teachers' spiritual life.
Exactly. You know, I think it's important, too. Sometimes we try and put in front of our children people around their age because we figure they can relate to them better. But look at these people that cathected to Pope John Paul, even in his later years, the youth, because they looked at his wisdom. Mm-hmm. And they looked to him as a person that they knew had lived a life and really could lead them into some faithfulness. And so the age was irrelevant. Mm-hmm. They looked at the man who he was, and that's a powerful thought of
him. Well, I think through all of that, he just exuded such joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
he
was always cheerful in that smiling, that twinkling eyes, and it was attractive.
Exactly.
You know, that's what drew you to him.
It is. Well, it's much like Pope Francis right now. He exudes that warmth and that friendliness and reaching out to people, that there's something electric about it, that you just want to be in his presence. Mm-hmm. And that's how Pope John Paul was.
Right.
At least seven times, you know.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Father Scott, I'm going to go back to you again for a little bit of education here. How is it that the Pope declares somebody a saint? I believe we've got beatification, and then, but what happens? What's the process?
Sure. So the process, and I'm not intimately familiar with how it works, but the general outline, as far as I know it, is that it starts by saying that the person in question, you know, this is John Paul II and John the 23rd, that these men lived a life of heroic virtue, that we can look at their lives and say these were virtuous people. These were, in their case, virtuous men, virtuous men and women. That there was something about their life that we can say this is someone to emulate. This is someone that we can hold up. Not that they were perfect, you know, they weren't. But that these were holy men who strived for the Lord. And then, in a way, the crazy part about the canonization process, you know, canonization being made part of the canon of the saints, the book of the saints, we could say, I guess,
yes.
is to have a miracle attributed to them. So saying, like, we can show, and when we say miracle, we mean that in the sense that something, generally it's medical, it's someone is cured, someone is healed of something in a way that medicine science just can't explain.
Right.
And we bring in doctors and scientists to try to explain it, to say what happened here, you know, in these cases, and they say we can't explain it. This is outside of what science and medicine is able to do and able to make sense of.
Exactly.
You know, it requires a miracle being attributed to the intercession of the particular saint, you know, of Saint John Paul II, of John the 23rd, of a miracle being attributed to them, and to say, you know, in terms of the public prayer of the church being made blessed as they are now, you know, blessed John Paul II and blessed John the 23rd, means in a way that it's okay to have a public prayer, you know, for their intercession, but not in the same sense as it would be for a saint. A saint is on the calendar, so to speak, is on the liturgical usage of the whole Catholic Church throughout the world. not that we aren't already, you know, inviting ourselves and our students and our listeners to ask for the intercession of John Paul II, to look to his life, for example, you know, but when he's made a saint on April 27th, it's going to be the universal church through Pope Francis saying these men are worthy of having us ask for their intercession throughout the Catholic Church, throughout the world.
Yes.
And so then they get put onto our, as we would call it, our liturgical calendar. Yes. So every year, and I don't actually know off the top of my head what the date will be, but every year they will show up on the calendar, and there will be particular prayers used to ask for their intercession, to remember them when we celebrate Mass, when we celebrate public prayers together as Catholics, that we're asking for their intercession, that we've shown by an amazing amount of testimony of people who knew them, and certainly with John Paul II and John the 23rd, that had to have been a lot of testimony of people who knew him, who met him, who interacted with him, and all of them saying the same thing, that yes, this man was in private who he seemed to be in public, that he really was a man who lived a life of heroic virtue, of someone worthy of being emulated.
And we call that character. What you do and nobody's watching. And that was Pope John Paul. He was really mad. You know, I do want to make a distinction for our non-Catholic audience listening too, because we don't say that saints were without sin. Only our Blessed Mother really was without sin in her life. That's how God created her. And of course, Jesus was God being God. He was without sin. But the understanding is they did live heroic, virtuous lives, and they lived for the goodness of God. And that in what they did in their lifetime really elevates them to sainthood. That's a beautiful understanding. Mm-hmm. Cindy, how long have you been principal at West Catholic?
This is my third year as principal.
So this has got to be one of the more exciting times for you.
Oh, it's very exciting. Very exciting.
Exactly. In the school, are the students, can you feel the anticipation of the day coming?
I absolutely think you can.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just great to hear, especially hear the kids wanting to answer the trivia questions and win that Phil has thrown out. But you can really feel that anticipation of the date, and that date is going to be fun for them. I mean, they're going to have a special Polish lunch. They're going to have some sports activities afterwards, and they've been learning a lot about them, and I just think that and not just the students with Polish heritage, but just that feeling from the students that here is somebody who I can really look up to, I can really pray to, someone who can help intercede on my behalf with God when I have issues and problems. I just get the feeling from the students that there's a lot of thankfulness that this is happening.
Yeah. And Phil, how long have you been youth director over there?
I think about 3 years.
About
the same time.
So you and Cindy about the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This has got to be one of the more exciting times for your students, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this isn't something we're just going to do on the 23rd and then just be done with it. No, this is something we want to continue on and continue grow and continue to allow his life to transform us.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so it certainly is a big deal, and the kids are railing behind it.
I would guess a lot of the students are probably bringing you more material every day about Pope John Paul.
Not so much. I mean, it's because I guess coming to realize is that, you know, like the kids were young, you know, when during that time. And so it's more so like, hey, how about go to your parents and your grandparents? And they, you know, I think one of the cool things about John Paul II is he was alive when their parents and their grandparents alive. And a lot of them, you know, like Sherry, have met him or seen him. You know, I know my wife had the opportunity to shake hands with him. And so they can talk.
And where was that at?
At the Vatican.
Okay,
yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah, and it was a random thing, but it happened, and so my wife has a picture of holding Pope John Paul II's hand, and actually we're asking the whole community if you have pictures and stories to send it to us, because we'd like to put those up for at our auction when our alumni and whatnot come back, just to be able to share and to display those stories.
Oh, that'd be wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Sherry, on your trips when you had met the Pope in his presence 7 times, the one highlight was when he shook your hand, right?
Of course.
But tell us a little bit about the other episodes that you had.
Well, I'm thinking of being in 1994 and anticipating him. We had driven straight through from Wisconsin to Colorado, so and with little kids too, and where we were going to park somewhere for the time being. But my husband and my dad and my mom were our chaperones. That's how we got
really?
The world yesterday. But we stopped, and when we got our tickets, we were only supposed to be at one event. and somebody just happened to be around that had extra tickets for the opening ceremony, which we did not have. Of course, my husband grabbed them, and we went to Mile High Stadium. And it was such a privilege to be in there because you're in the stadium just waiting for that helicopter to come in sight. And when that helicopter came in sight, it just... I mean, it just went wild inside that stadium. And so it was just electric. And so it just builds, builds, builds. And when you finally see him in your presence, it was just awesome. And I had very decent seats to see him very close. So it was
the Lord is good to you.
It was. And then even at the Mass, where we were positioned, it was much easier in Denver to get up to him than it was in Rome. The Italians are much more like, you know, guarding you.
Right.
But we were able to roam from our section. So during the Masses, we could roam right up to the section. He was stand up and look right up at him.
The Mass
stand there.
Was not in the stadium, though, was it?
No, the Mass was at Cherry Creek Park.
Okay.
Which that is a pilgrimage to get in. It's a long walk. You're carrying all your stuff that you're going to stay in all night long.
Right.
It was very hot. That day, the opening Mass was more comfortable, but the closing Mass, it was so hot, there were people dropping. The kids didn't know enough to hydrate themselves, and they were dropping like flies all around you. So it was a tough, rigorous kind of experience to go through, but it was all worth it.
And how many people were attended that World Youth Day there?
At Denver? Yeah. I remember hearing like 500,000.
Yeah, I know it was big.
Yeah. But in Rome, it was 2.5 million.
Well, somebody was just telling me today, we have our ready to go, and somebody said to expect at least 2.5 million.
Wow.
Someone told me today they heard 5 million.
Oh, wow.
So we're somewhere in between 2 and 5 million. It's going to be... Wow.
Well, just the electricity being in that number is very powerful.
I know half of Poland's going to be in Rome that day, so it's going to be powerful. So here we are. Could somebody give me a little synopsis, what it's going to be like, what the Mass is going to be like on that day? What's going to be the protocol of that Mass? How does this start to dedicate?
Mm-hmm. So it will be, we'll start at 10:10, and again, the public is welcome to join us. And so we'd like to show a little video in the beginning. And so, you know, there's a lot of movies out there, and so we'll be able to show a snippet. And then, Mass will, and again, we're going to be in our gym. We're expecting a larger turnout, so we'll be in our new gym. And again,
by the way, how many can that hold? Any idea?
Thousands.
A thousand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So thousands.
Thousands.
Come.
Thousands. Okay. A couple thousand.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, show the video, and then Mass will start. And like I said, Bishop will be able to, he'll be there celebrating Mass with us. And so, after celebration of Mass, you'll be able to, the visitors, we're going to have a little refreshments from cake and some coffee.
Okay.
To be able just to for fellowship and just being able to hang out and celebrating this day.
Okay.
Later on, the students will, again, have a free lunch, Polish lunch. And so, a lot of Polish students, and so they're very excited for that.
A lot of
like, hey. They're like, is this going to be better than my mom's? You know, so they're all familiar, but they're excited for it. And so, and the religion classes, in the other classes, we're going to be focused on JP2. And again, not like, hey, everyone, let's write a paper about John Paul II today, but just really in a fun way to be able to celebrate his life. And at the end of school, from 2 to 3, we're going to have different activities, like Sherry was mentioning. You know, he was big into soccer, so we'll have a different soccer competition.
Oh,
yeah, you know, it'll be a trivia contest. And so all this trivia that I've been learning, let's see how well we're remembering it.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So those are different ways we're going to have fun, and even that will create a little competition out of it against the classes.
Yeah.
And so I'm pumped. This is going to be an exciting
day. It's going to be a great time.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great time. I'm going to put Father Scott on the hot spot again here. During the Mass, there must be some particular prayer or some dedication that the bishop will do, I would assume.
Correct.
How would that proceed? What part of the Mass would that take place?
So that'll probably be, because Phil and I are still working out exactly how that's all going to happen. And but it'll be, you know, during the homily time, which is generally when we kind of, add things to Mass. And so what we'll do is we'll have just a blessing, a prayer, that we'll have the bishop sort of have the bishop kind of officially make John Paul II our patron saint at West Catholic, and have the bishop, who is, I mean, he's the pastor of our school, he's the shepherd of our school and of all of our students, you know, have him make it official for us, have him I don't want to say like consecrate us to John Paul II, we're already a Catholic school, but to let John Paul II be, you know, be our patron saint, and have something that I believe, Phil, correct me if I'm wrong, we're having a I don't know if competition is the right word, but we're having a a thing that we're doing to have someone write kind of a prayer,
okay,
so that we can put it on a prayer card and let it be, you know, this will be the, like, the official, so to speak, prayer of West Catholic, asking for the intercession of John Paul II.
Will it be proper at that time, seeing it's prior to the canonization, to call him Saint?
So that's a great question. Liturgically, he will always be referred to as Blessed John Paul II, okay, just as in the Eucharistic prayer, the prayer of the consecration of the bread and wine into the Eucharist.
Right.
It's Blessed Mary, ever Virgin, Blessed Joseph, her spouse, the Blessed Apostles, the Blessed Martyrs. It'll be the same thing, Blessed John Paul II.
Okay.
And he's already, so in the context of the Mass and liturgical prayer of the Church, he's Blessed John Paul II, and he will remain Blessed John Paul II. At that time, on April 23rd, it's, you know, can we call him Saint John Paul II? Maybe technically no. There's a way we'll kind of, it's like, well, it's going to happen in 4 days.
That's right. Yeah. But the reason I ask is that it's good catechesis for all of us to hear this, because particular Catholics and particularly our non-Catholic brothers and sisters who sometimes wonder all our terminology in the Catholic Church and the blessed and all that, but it's exactly right. The liturgy of the Mass, it's always blessed, and it's an understanding of how we see the saints and martyrs and those that go on before us. So we're in our last few minutes here. Tell me what this means. I want to get a little feedback from each and every one of you, because you're really personally involved in this, and this is something I haven't seen either. I mean, I'm watching this go on. I'm watching a school dedicate a saint to their school as a patron saint. But what does it mean to you personally, and how do you feel it's going to be for the school, for West Catholic?
Personally, I am very excited about it, because I also can use a patron saint, having it official, you know, JP2 being someone I can pray to for intercession on a personal level.
Yeah.
For me, it's very important. For the school, I think that Catholic education today has never been more important, and I'm strongly encouraged that we have a patron saint who has fought the battles of evil of communism,
yeah,
and has seen a society where religion was no longer allowed or tolerated, who's our patron saint, who I almost picture him marching West Catholic forward, in the environment that we live in right now, it's faith is on the back burner in so many people's lives.
Yeah.
And he's been there, he's done that, and I can't imagine anyone better to lead West Catholic as a school, as a community, towards our faith and towards God, with the vision of, you know, Christ in front of us and where we need to go. We need a leader, and I see him as that leader, yeah, for the school.
You know, you make a great point too about John Paul really fighting in a time when religion wasn't allowed to be openly expressed in the streets. You know, it's been said too, and I'm not advocating fighting, but it's always been said, don't love peace more than you love freedom. And the understanding is that there is something worth fighting for, and that's our faith. And if it means we have to stand up for Christ, like John Paul was willing to do in his life, it's important for us to understand that we do have that liberty right now to express our faith. But if we become complacent, we could lose that also. And I think John Paul is a great example of really standing up for that. Father Scott, being personal and as a chaplain, what does that mean for you in the school?
Yeah, that's a great question. So personally, for me, it's exciting. I mean, in a way, I think of myself, you know, in terms of my generation of priests as a little bit of the John Paul II generation of priests that following in his footsteps of, we saw in him how to be a priest. He teaches me, he teaches my brother priests, he teaches us how to be a priest. We're also, in a way, John Paul II died, he died when I was a senior in high school. All of my years in seminary were under
I hate to say this, but I have socks older than you.
Yep. I think a lot of our listeners can probably echo the same thought. my time in the seminary was with Pope Benedict, being the shepherd of our church, and so we're also in a way part of Benedict's generation and how Pope Benedict continued to carry on the legacy, continued to carry on the papacy of John Paul II.
Yeah.
I think in terms of being as the chaplain at West Catholic, it's exciting. I'm excited about it. I'm really happy for our students that they get to see in John Paul II what we have all seen in him. To see a man whose life we want to follow, we want to emulate, a man whose writings are things that we'll be studying for years, for generations to come. A man who spoke so eloquently about life, about love, about Jesus Christ, and I think in a way whose writings, whenever during his lifetime they were written, are still so important, so telling in our day and age, and in our time. And I want our students, I want our young people to learn about John Paul II, to read what he wrote, to understand what he was saying and why he was saying it. So I as the chaplain at West, it's exciting. It's a great thing to be part of. It's a great thing to enter into as a school to enter into. John Paul II is our patron. He's a man that we want to hold up as important for us.
You know, Father, you're a young man, and I thank you for what you do over there, because the youth need to see you in the position you're at, a young man dedicating himself to the Lord and really living a faithful life in God. And thank you for doing that. That's a beautiful testimony to the priesthood. Phil, how about you?
There's a lot. So I mean, even before I started working at West Catholic, I always said that John Paul II was in my Fab Five of top saints, and a couple things I can think of that just really have helped me. I think of the time he was shot, and again he forgave that person, and how many of us hold on to grudges and wounds when we really just need to let them go and forgive. And so I think that's a powerful example. I think of, theology of the body. Like, we're very confused about sexuality in our age. And so here's someone that speaks to that with, trying to explain in a persuasive way God's plan for our sexuality. And I think, all of us, especially young people, need to be able to know that, understand it, and hopefully have it resonate in their heart.
Exactly.
And, I think lastly, though, maybe foundationally, at least for me, and hopefully as we go forward as our school, be not afraid, open the doors wide to Christ. I think he said that a lot. And I think in all of us in some way are afraid, and he calls us, he challenges us to open our heart to Christ. Because, one of his quotes that we talked about was that we will not be, he will not let us down. And so to be able to see Pope John Paul II's confidence and to be able to hope that rub off on not only the staff, but also the students.
I want to thank you, too, for sharing that about the forgiveness, because, that's one of the things we so often overlook about being able to forgive. And that was one of the beautiful things about Pope John Paul II, is he was able to forgive the person that did him great harm. So, that's a lesson for all of us. And Sherry, what about you?
Well, I'm just excited that this is finally my sixth one is going to be here. We'll have the benefit of all this. Jill was my friend who did that painting, and I remember at the time she's like, didn't want to store my barn or whatever, and I'm like, no, this is too good. This has to be. And so I was after Stan Spetosky at the time and said, you have to buy this, or I'll buy it, I'll donate it, whatever. Yeah. It has to hang in. And I can't believe the journey that this picture has taken the school. It's very exciting. So, but one of the things I want this to hopefully that the kids have the courage to stand up for their faith. There was something that I had read about him that there was something that for 26 years of tradition, it was going to break because of the communists. They couldn't get the people in to pray. And he went and snuck in and wanted to continue that tradition. He didn't want to break that tradition that nobody was praying.
Yeah.
I have to go back and look. But I would love to know that his strength of his presence and his patron saint there is giving those kids the strength to stand up against everything that they have to stand up against this
Amen.
Day and fight for their faith.
And our children are under great stress in these times to really stay in faithfulness. But I want to thank all of you for being here today. Particularly, I want to remind our listeners that there's going to be a Mass on April 23rd at 10:10 at West Catholic High School. Our Bishop Wolkowiak will be there with other priests, and maybe have a couple deacons on the altar there, but it's really an understanding of dedicating West Catholic, and Pope John Paul II will be the patron saint, and it's going to be a marvelous time. I want to again thank you for all your effort, because it really is, our Catholic education is so vitally important in this world today, and it really brings our youth into an understanding of the sacredness of who they are. They not only do they live their life spiritually, but the whole person is developed in them, and they really become members of a society that go out in the world and really serve the Lord Jesus Christ. I want to thank all of our listeners today listening to Holy Family Radio. I'd say that may God bless you, and may you continue on your journey with the Lord, and may you have a blessed Holy Week. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Living the Catholic Life with your host, Deacon Jim Thorndale, on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening.